in east of Marseille. Well, looking from here, the difference is not that much, but
University of
Marseille, so for me, there is a difference. Well, thank you, and I'd like to thank the organizers for this possibility to come here. I'm going to talk about uniqueness theorems for harmonic functions. It's boundary uniqueness theorems in the unit disk. Let's say it's a rather traditional topic. It's interesting that we still are able to ask meaningful questions and get reasonable answers. So we start with a unit disk, and suppose that we have a function u on the unit disk, which is either harmonic or non-negative, and subharmonic. Then the maximum principle tells us that if the limits, the boundary limits of our function are equal to zero everywhere, then the function itself is zero. Well, this is clear. Now, if we start to weaken this condition on the boundary values, we can do it in many different ways. We can ask that the limits are equal to zero almost everywhere, or we can think about, well, here the limit is not restricted. We can think about radial limits or about non-tangential limits or about some restricted tangential limits across some access domains, like in yesterday talk by Richard Rochberg. Then the situation becomes different. Let me start with such an example, a very concrete harmonic function, which is just the derivative of the Poisson kernel. For this function, the radial limits exist everywhere and are equal to zero. So if you'd like to obtain a uniqueness theorem, like in all fragmental Mendeleev type situations, we need to impose some growth conditions on our functions. So if we deal with radial limits or non-tangential limits, we need to ask something about the growth of our functions to get a result. And normally we impose some growth restrictions just in terms of the supremum of our function on the circles of radii tending to 1, or in terms of restrictions on the absolute value of our functions. Let me start with the first result here. This is the theorem proved by Dalberg in 77. If we have a non-negative subharmonic function, which has zero radial limits everywhere, and it has such an estimate on the growth, then it is zero. And our example, the function u0, shows that this O small is sharp. Where?
The word limit as
he
goes
to here or here? Up there?
Let me up above, yeah.
Up there it's a non-restricted limit. That means that well, you are approaching from the disk without any restriction. This is the radial limit, radial theorem, and there exists a non-tangential version of this result. Well, to define non-tangential, we introduce the Stoltz angles. This is the unit circle. This is the angles theta. And this is the Stoltz angle ending at the point e power I phi. So this is denoted by omega theta phi. Then Berman and Kohn in 88 proved such a result. Once again, u is non-negative, subharmonic. Theta is between 0 and pi over 2. The non-tangential limits are equal to 0 everywhere. And the growth estimate is like this. Then we have the uniqueness result. So here the growth restriction is well, very similar to that of Dalberg, and we can say that in the limit case when the Stoltz angle becomes the radius, that is for theta equal to pi over 2, this result, at least formally, turns to be the result of Dalberg. Yeah. Theta is, theta and u, we fix them. Well, theta we fix, and then for u we have the uniqueness result. And once again, this O small is sharp. There is an example which shows that it's sharp. And of course, there are many versions of these two results where limit values zero exist outside thin sets, outside countable sets or sets of zero Hausdorff measure. Okay, this is what is happening with non-negative subharmonic functions. What is the situation with harmonic functions? Here there is a an analog or we can say a predecessor of Dalberg result. It's a result by V. L. Shapiro, 63. Function U is harmonic. The radial limits are equal to zero. The growth is O small of 1 minus r power minus 2. Then U is equal to zero. So here there is a very close analogy between the subharmonic and harmonic functions. And once again, this is small and sharp because of our function U naught. What is happening if the if we consider non-tangential approach for harmonic functions? We can think that we would have an analog of Berman-Kohn. It's not true. Here we have such a result obtained by F. Wolf, 41, which states that if U is harmonic and theta is between 0 and pi over 2, we have non-tangential limits equal to zero everywhere. But the growth condition is rather different here. We have instead of a polynomial growth, we have exponential growth here. Okay. Until recently, there were no examples showing how sharp is this growth condition. I believe it's interesting to find out, since there is here such a big difference between the harmonic and non-negative subharmonic case, what's the matter? And on the other hand, you think that in the radial case we have just the polynomial growth, in the non-tangential case we have already an exponential growth. So it's reasonable to ask, what is really the dependence of the growth on the size of the approach domain? Well, once again, like in yesterday's talk, where it was rather smoothness, the interrelation between smoothness and the approach domain. Here it's the interrelation between growth and the size of the approach domain. One more remark is that here we have the estimates on both the positive and the negative values of the harmonic function. We should say that, in fact, it's sufficient to just ask, to just impose the conditions on the from above on this function U. We are going to tell about this. And time permitting, we are going to mention some LP analogs of this uniqueness questions. So, we start with our access domains. So let h be a non-decreasing function. H of 0 equal to 0. We consider the generalized Stoltz angles in the upper half plane. So this is AH. AH is just a set x plus iy such that the modulus of x is less than or equal to AH of y. So this is y and this is h of x. And then we just consider the conformal image of such a domain in the unit disk ending at the point exponential I theta, which we denote by omega h of theta. Well, if we start with a linear function h here, this is a Stoltz angle here. It's not quite a Stoltz angle, but the difference is of the second order, and it doesn't influence our uniqueness results. So our first result obtained with Tamilov is like this. So let u be harmonic function, once again in the unit disk. Such that all the limits along the approach domains are zero. Then well, this is the situation considered by Shapiro. If h is zero, and the growth is like this, then we have uniqueness. If, so this is the radial approach. If we consider a rather thin approach domain, if h of t is a constant times t square, cube, and if we have this exponential estimate, then we have already the uniqueness result. Next is the result by Wolf. If h is a constant times t, is linear, and we have this growth. Then we also have the uniqueness. Next, we consider somewhat bigger domains. This is y, this is y power gamma. So h of t is equal to t power gamma, gamma between 0 and 1, and log log r is a small of 1 minus r power gamma minus 1. Then u is equal to 0. Gamma is between 0 and 1. And next, what should be next? Next we should consider the exponential type access domains. Like this. Well, I have not yet calculated the answer. Anyway, it's not going to reach the growth like this. And the reason is that here we have a new situation. For functions of such growth, there are no uniqueness results possible, no matter what is the, well, fixed access domain. This is not very strange. Similar situations appear, similar effects appear when you consider functions which are not in the MacLane class, where the whole situation changes when you pass this degree of growth. In fact, one can improve a bit on this. So let me formulate it like this. If we consider such a class, and the quasi-analyticity condition holds, and of course phi is regular, then there is no uniqueness theorem of the kind we consider here. This is the theorem, and we need some examples to show that it is sufficiently sharp. It is sharper than, yeah? We ask just a question about the growth of u. Yeah, this is just the same thing, pi over 2 theta. No. It is just the same thing. Rectangles. is the angle such that it's tangent.
Okay.
I'm sorry. Okay. Well, our first example is once again our function u0. So now, if h of t is O of t cube, then we can say that the growth of our function is like 1 minus r minus 2. And the limits are zero everywhere. So this shows sort of why B is sharp. Because if you consider smaller domains, we just go back to our function u0. If gamma between 1 and 3, including 3, and h of t is t to power gamma, and epsilon is positive, then there exists a function u harmonic in the disk such that it has just exponential growth. Well, and the limits are zero. So this shows in the different way why B is sharp. Okay, this is the counterexample for Wolf. There exists a function u which is harmonic and such that log plus and the limits are zero. And finally, well, D is also sharp, at least in such a sense, if gamma is between 0 and 1, h of t is equal to t power gamma, then for some k depending on gamma, we can produce an example with growth like this. And the limits zero. What can we say? On the other hand, the methods are sufficiently they are traditional. You apply several fragmented of type statements, and log-log Levinson theorems, also maybe several times. It's MR. It's the supremum of your function on the circle of radius R.
It says that the absolute value assumption
allows yeah.
you to do that.
Yeah, yeah.
So in some sense, you don't need a continuous variable r going to 1, but some discrete sequence going to 1 will give you the same soup, right?
On what level? On the level of A, B, or?
No, I'm just thinking of definition.
Yeah. No. I'm not talking about positive harmonic functions. If your function is positive and harmonic, it just doesn't have any such growth. If it's positive, then its growth is already restricted by that of the Poisson kernel. But in a couple of minutes, I'm going to just talk about this. Let's look at it. You have a harmonic function. You impose some conditions on the growth of its positive part, and you are interested what can you say about the negative values of this function. The setup is like this. You have a function u which is harmonic in the unit disk. Let us normalize it. U of 0 is equal to 0. Let A be... A is going to be a measurement. So A is non-decreasing on 0, 1. Suppose that we know that MR of U is less than or equal to A of R. Question is how to estimate the growth of minus U. Well, if A is just zero, if your harmonic function is non-positive, then by the Carattaia-Dori formula you can say that your growth is at most the inverse distance to the boundary. Cartwright proved in the 30s that if A is 1 over 1 minus R power A bigger than 1, then the negative part cannot grow much more rapidly than the positive part. Here I'm starting with A bigger than 1 because at the order 1 the situation becomes more complicated. Until the order 1 you are getting order 1. At the order 1, you have order 1 plus the logarithm terms. Starting from order 1, you are getting this with some constant. What is happening for bigger growth, because here our growth is sometimes exponential, sometimes double exponential. Here we have such a result of Nikolsky. If our function is, our measurement is sufficiently regular, and it grows more rapidly than any power of the distance to the boundary, then the growth of a negative part can be estimated like this, with C a large absolute constant, maybe 20 or 30. So this shows you why we are able, in our situations, our measurements are sufficiently regular, so we are able to impose conditions just on the positive side. Here, since we are talking about this, I'd like to formulate some more precise results about the relation between the growth of the positive and the negative part. First of all, if A is regular and it grows more rapidly than any polynomial, log. In fact, we can say that the constant is just one. And this is sharp because of the symmetry. You can apply the same thing to minus u. And in the Cartwright case, so if the order of growth is finite, then the sharp constant is like this. And if you look at the asymptotics of this, when delta goes to 1, the constant blows up. When delta goes to infinity, this constant tends to 1. This is sharp. There are examples showing that it's sharp. Probably I should tell you that a similar theorem holds for harmonic function in the whole plane. Here I don't want to talk about the proof itself, but the proof uses a very funny lemma. so I'll formulate the lemma I like. Lemma is like this. You have the half plane, real part z bigger than 0. This is c plus. Suppose that you have a function which is harmonic in c plus. In satisfying such an estimate, it's harmonic and just less than or equal to modulus z squared in the half plane. Then on the positive half line, you have such a very sharp inequality. You don't impose any conditions on the negative side. Just the positive side is less than or equal to modulus z squared. And here you have just, well, this term cx, you cannot do anything about it. It's just that cx is a harmonic function, which is, well, we see positive minus cx is just negative in the whole half plane. So this condition cannot influence this. But if you forget about this, you are just getting a very symmetric result. If the guy is less than or equal to this, then it's bigger than or equal to minus x squared without any constant. Here. Well, this is, what is the constant? It's something like u of 1 is a plus or minus 1. It's a very concrete. This looks very elementary, this lemma. And I know two proofs of this. One I don't quite like it, because it's, well, and another one is difficult. So I'm going to tell you about the difficult. It's not long, but somehow somehow it looks like such a statement should have a simple and short proof. So how could we prove such a thing? First of all, we consider such an auxiliary function. Which is also harmonic. It is harmonic, and what can we say about it? On the imaginary axis, it's non-positive. And if you play with a constant k here, you can get that, we suppose that our inequality does not hold for any constant c. Then we can choose such k that v of 1 will be positive, and somewhere later on the real axis, v is going to be negative. And without, well, replacing it by the symmetric harmonic function, you can assume that your function is just symmetric with respect to the real axis. If you see at this thing, here v is non-positive, here it is positive, and somewhere here it is negative. It's a harmonic function. So what is the place where this function is positive? It's an open domain. It's an open domain, well, maybe bigger than epsilon. It's an open domain which cannot touch the imaginary axis. Let us think about the component which contains this point 1. Well, there is such a component. What I should say is that from some place on, these two parts, well, they are symmetric because our function is symmetric. These two parts don't touch the real axis, because otherwise, by the maximum principle, our domain would include the whole half line, and it's impossible. So it means that we have two components here, where our function is positive. On the other hand, somewhere here it is negative, so there is a component where our function is negative. So our harmonic function has three components here, and it's too much, because by the Alfors-Karliman estimates and our assumption that u is of restricted growth, so v is of restricted growth here and here, and if you just write the Alfors-Karliman estimates, let's call this component omega plus. Well, we can call it omega plus, this omega minus, and this, let's say, omega zero. So if you consider this plus this, plus max of minus V Z by omega naught, this should be less than or equal to 1 over log R minus C. And these two first terms already give you something like 1 over log R. So this term is going to be very small. And this means that our function minus v should be very large. So our harmonic function is very negative, and our function minus v grows very rapidly. And this is, well, this is impossible. You can prove it just by estimates of the harmonic measure. Well, as I told you, it's a nice lemma with a bit complicated proof. Maybe one can find some quite elementary proof here. Okay. Yeah, let me finish by some LP analog of our uniqueness theorems. new key. Once again, we return to our function u0. And if you consider, if you calculate the LP norms on the circles, it will be like it will be like 1 minus r power minus 2 plus 1 over p. On the other hand, if you have if u is subharmonic and the LP norms are or small of 1 minus r power minus 2 plus 1 over p, then one can verify that the uniform norms are like this. And we don't get anything new. We just return to the Dahlberg Shapiro situation. So we can say that there are no LP analogs of our activity, because we cannot formulate any reasonable result about it. It's because we are starting from the function theory side. And of course, in this, it's sort of clear, the motivation for theorems like this comes from estimates of resonance for operators, for semigroups. And so there you do encounter formulations with LP norms. Let me give you such a formulation. Which looks a bit strange, but nevertheless, suppose that we have a subharmonic function theta belongs to 0 pi over 2, m is between 0 and pi over 2, pi over theta, and we have two functions, two non-negative functions defined on the unit disk. F is continuous on D, not on the closure, and G is measurable. Suppose that u is less than or equal to f times g. The non-tangential limits of f are zero everywhere. The restrictions of g are uniformly in L1. One more condition is a global condition. The growth is like this. Then u is equal to zero. So what has happened? The the growth control here and the convergence properties are separated. One function corresponds to the corresponds to the boundary behavior, to the convergence, another one corresponds to the growth. And together you have such a control of your function. But it's sufficiently weak. Nevertheless, we need to impose such a condition. In the harmonic situation, it's even weaker. It's just that our function is of finite order, no matter what order. Here, the order should be less than pi over theta. The results of Berman-Kohn show that here this restriction is sufficiently sharp. On the other hand, in the harmonic situation, we don't have counterexamples until the Wolf exponential growth. Okay, that's all. Thank you.